to join us today. And as we continue looking at seam shifted wake and other pitch movement, we are going to be joined next by Major League Baseball scientist Clay Nunnally, as well as Dr. Paul Hawkins of Hawkeye Innovations. And they will be sharing some of the latest and greatest in StatCast pitch tracking methods. So Clay, if you want to go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here today. And this is a great panel to be in. I'm really amazed at all the things that Glenn, Bart, and Alan have been figuring out from the data that they have. So it's really interesting stuff. All right. So, what I'm going to talk about is just pitch tracking methods throughout Major League Baseball. And one big thing for me is context, historical context. I think the theme of this talk is going to be how you measure, pitching matters. It matters with what you can communicate about that event. Historical context, let's start back at the start. This is Popular Science magazine in 1970. And there's a guy who wants to know how fast Major League Baseball pitchers throw the ball. So he uses a hand-cranked camera and has a stopwatch that's in the video of the camera and does some analysis and figures out that the pitcher, is throwing 2.5 miles a minute, which comes out to be 150 miles an hour. So that's an indication of people are interested in pitch analytics, even in 1917, and they weren't super accurate, right? Also in this version, in this issue of Popular Science, is a mechanical hair parter and a bayonet that has antiseptic on it to help people not get infections from wounds. So those are just kind of some bellwethers that date how far back we've been interested in tracking pitches. Now, something a little more accurate is actually in a ballistics lab. So Walter Johnson and another pitcher were invited to go throw in a laboratory setting. They throw through a wire grid, which was what would be like an opening switch, if you care. But they throw a ball that triggers an electrical signal on the first wire array, and then it'd hit the second wire array. And they could figure out the average velocity of a pitch that way. And it turns out Walter Johnson's throwing approximately 83 in this setting. And the next, the pitcher they brought in, who also is thought to be very fast at this time, in 1913, was throwing about 77. So now I'm starting to get a little bit more persuaded that this is accurate. Average velo of 83 miles an hour, that's pretty good. Pretty good for 1913. All right, so now we move along in time, and you can watch this video here. But Bob Feller seems like a good target for people trying to understand how fast he can throw. And you'll see here that they move a ballistic gate in front of home plate and measure 98.6 miles an hour in front of at the plate below. And that's really impressive. But the other thing they do is stunts like trying to drive a motorcycle past him while he pitches, and then do some analytics to figure out how fast he's going. All I can tell from this video is they say he's throwing plenty fast, well over 100 miles an hour. So you can see these are, kind of tricks, but people have always been interested in pitch tracking, pitch analytics. And then after World War II, we get into the first radar guns. So this is the first in situ tracking tool used in Major League Baseball, I would say. And it's looks like these pictures here to your right, and they measure the phase shift or the frequency shift of RF going to the ball. So it can look at the component of velocity of a moving object that's in the direction the gun's pointing. This is why you'll see scouts sitting behind home plate and not at third base. So now this is a tool that we can use to analyze pitches and then also find out who throws fast, who throws hard, and use that as a training tool, an analysis tool for the first time. And I included a picture here of one that's open. So you can see that there's, you know, a horn antenna, and this thing is, you know, pretty crude when it comes to technology, but it's been ubiquitous throughout baseball for decades. Now, what this type of measurement introduces is that it depends on who made the radar gun, and it depends on where the operator is pointing it. So there's hot guns, there's cold guns, and where in the trajectory you measure pitch velocity is going to matter what the number is on the back. Danny Littweiler is a former Major League Baseball player, or was. He's thought to be the first guy to sew the fingers on his glove together, but he also partnered up with a technical partner after his playing career invented, and they together invented the Judge radar gun, which has been, like I said, ubiquitous for decades. And that tells us really important things, and it gets good feedback to the pitchers so they can understand, you know, not only how fast they throw, but what's the velocity difference between their fastball and their changeup. You know, that's some of the first tools for pitch design, is getting that feedback immediately. All right, now let's fast forward to 2006, 2016. In this era, we had camera-based pitch tracking system called PitchFX. And finally, we get lots of pitch trajectory data. So this is two cameras at 60 hertz, and we get around 20 or 24 frames for every pitch. And we could tell new things about baseball from this stuff. We could get the velocity, and we reported velocity at 50 foot in this era for a reason I'll mention in a second. We could get plate crossing data fairly accurately, pretty good. We could also see movement now and begin to quantify pitch movement, right? Fast speed isn't the only game in town. Pitch movement matters, all right? So what about some other things that we know of now? Pitch release point, that's really hard to measure at 60 hertz. At least it was in 2006 to 2016. It's a hard thing to measure regardless. For spin rate, so we can measure movement, and pretty much all movement that isn't attributed to gravity or drag, we say, I bet spin caused it, right? The Magnus model. Now, spin direction, something even harder to measure, I would say. We can see which direction the pitch moves and make some reasonable estimate about the orientation of the spin vector. All right, so these are estimates. Release point, we didn't even try that back then. And the reason you can't measure velocity or measure pitch movement at pitch release is because you can't know that point in time very well. And if it's that noisy, it's going to make all of the subsequent data noisy. So that's one of the reasons that velocity was reported at 50 foot. All right, so more recent history, which seems like years ago, one pandemic ago, the StatCast era, we used a Doppler radar from the TrackMan guys to track baseball. And we got to measure some really amazing things. These guys at TrackMan are wizards at analog signal processing. And the fact that they can get a spin rate out of a Doppler radar signal is incredible. But it's also the first time we could actually get a real measurement of the spin rate of the baseball. And that's useful for analyzing, scouting, and developing pitchers. But also because of the fine grain data we have on ball position all over the field, we started being able to measure release point with some amount of accuracy. And those are two super important ingredients, I think, for pitchers over the last, 5 or 6 years. So spin orientation is something we tried to infer from this data, but we weren't measuring spin orientation directly, but we could see which direction the ball moved. And we also knew what the total spin rate was. So we could start to understand where that spin rate was. Was it in the active plane? Was it in the gyro mode? And how much backspin, how much side spin? We had pretty good estimates. Bart doesn't want to say good estimates, but we had estimates for what those were. All right, so now this is Hawkeye. Hawkeye was introduced to Major League Baseball in 2020, and they track the ball all over the field, as well as players and many other things, but I'll focus just on the ball tracking here. The scheme is that it's 12 synchronous cameras, and they can track pitches, hits, players, umpires, coaches, anything that's on the field. And one of the things that's really impressive about Hawkeye is that because there's 12 cameras, we get redundancy and accuracy because there's so many inputs to the value of where the ball is during play. So the first thing that's been mentioned is that now we're directly measuring the spin orientation. All right, so this is understanding spin without relying on any model. And I'll mention why that's important later. But the other things that we started to understand more from the Hawkeye data are that we can see spin decay during a pinch. And we start to see spin efficiency change in flight. These are things that we know happen, but we've never had the tools available to quantify them. So I can't say exactly, those are probably pretty minor things and nuanced things. And I can't say how those will matter in the future, but they're new things that we can measure because of Hawkeye. So the other thing that Hawkeye figured out, that Paul and his team figured out, is a way to determine pitch release with some surprising accuracy and not using super high frame cameras. But I'll talk about that in just a second. And so this is a pitch I've slowed down. Where did the pitcher release the ball? Which direction is it spinning? How fast is it spinning? If you're watching this, if you're Bart Smith, you can watch this and estimate it by watching the video. But that's also how Hawkeye does this. It's a computer vision system. We see the ball spinning because we can see the seams. And we can sort of see where the hand and the ball separate, so we can get a rough estimate in our brains anyways about where the pitcher's released. Quantifying that's a little bit harder. But the same concepts are there for Hawkeye. So here's where... let me reset this a bit, but one of the things I do in Major League Baseball is test tracking systems. And one of the things we test, because we think it's hard to measure, is release point. How well can Hawkeye measure release point? And we tested Hawkeye on how well they measure release point, and it was more accurate than I would have expected, especially using cameras that are running at 100 hertz. So I attributed this to magic at the time until Paul explained, well, we don't just look at the ball, we look at the biomechanical signature of the pitcher. So where the point in space and time where the pitcher's fingers and the free flight trajectory of the ball intersect give us a really good indication of where the ball is released. So this is an important Hawkeye lesson to me, not just using ball tracking data to figure things out, but also using contextual data, in this case, biomechanical. All right, so I'm going to go through some of the views that Hawkeye has, and it'll give you an idea of where the cameras are in the stadium and what kind of data they're telling us. But one of the important things here is that each camera that we'll go through can report or can contribute to the calculation of where the ball is based on the quality of data available from that camera view. So having 12 camera views allows Hawkeye to track the ball through, through weird contrast regions, and also obstructions. The other thing I mentioned is Hawkeye gets really good accuracy and reliability out of so many cameras. One nice thing about that is one camera can go down, and we can still track the baseball more accurately than we've ever tracked it before. So there's that element of no single point failure and redundancy. All right, here's another view. You'll see there's a subset of the 12 cameras that are focused on tracking the pitch to plate event. And you'll see there's green frames in this image that indicate where this camera thinks the ball is. And you'll see when a ball goes over, say, a chalk line or something that doesn't present great contrast, the camera knows that data quality is not great and won't contribute to its calculation of its location on the field. All right, then you also see, when you see this many frames, it gives you an indication of the frame rate. More frames is better. This camera is probably not on pitch tracking detail, but it still tracks the pitch. This one's probably used to track hit trajectories, as is this one. So other things that we're looking to target, players and hit trajectories. But even though, even in an image like this, which contains everything that happens on the field, players, hit trajectories, we can still track the pitch trajectory here. All right, spin, I think, is the name of the game for this this session. I'm going to show this video again because I want you to think about how we know that this ball is spinning. All right? This is a day game. The ball is lit from the top, but we can see those seams rotating, and we can at least guess basically what type of pitch this is. We could probably even guess the spin vector if you looked at it long enough. But quantifying it and being reliable at that is a different story. Hawkeye measures spin by looking at seams, the same way humans measure spin. All right, they're really important elements of contrast and asymmetry on the ball. So all of the talks in this session, Bart, Glenn, and Alan are going to start telling you why this matters. But in general, this matters because we can measure spin and pitch trajectory separately. That's the whole ball of wax in measuring pitch spin to me. Because we can measure those things separately, we don't have to conflate them using a model. So it's model independent, and that's pretty great. So we started off with a dude with a stopwatch and a hand cranked video camera, which you can guess is not a pretty standard frame rate. And we wind up with 12 cameras and some of the most incredible computer vision software available in the world. So, like I say, pitch tracking is all about answering where is the ball, where are the seams, and it influences what we can communicate, what we know about baseball, and how we get that feedback to fans, to players, and physicists. So why is this important? Why is the direct spin measurement important? Well, there's other presentations that'll tell you more about that more than I. But I also have Paul Hawkins also on here who helped me answer questions. But the Hawkeye is a sports tracking company that Paul invented, and they basically are deployed for just about every sport out there in over 500 stadiums in the world. So baseball is just one of the things that Paul is an expert in tracking. And so the first question I have for Paul is, when you first measured seams in order to get spin rate of a baseball, did you think this many people would be interested?
No, it was not at all. It's when we, you know, asked to do Major League Baseball, we knew we could track a ball because we've done that for 20 years, and we could then track players and the biomechanics and probably the release point and the spin were the two things that were the greatest challenges to us that are unique to baseball and done differently. So we knew we had to do it with vision, and we knew we needed to get cameras that were tight enough and in the right kind of field of view to better see the seams on the ball to do it. But you know, what's been great about this relatively recent innovation, I suppose, or taking it a step further of providing you the data for you to really be into to research beam shifted wake was, you know, it was trivial for us to provide the data once we knew you needed it, because you kind of showed briefly in your presentation how we go about seeing the orientation at every single frame to then use that to calculate the spin. And therefore, you know, we've got all the data you'll need to begin to analyze seam shifted wake. And the great things of these kind of conferences is it combines the technical, the innovation of what's technically possible with the application led, you know, what does baseball need? What the scientist needs to research their kind of their next thing. And this is the all great innovation is application led. And that was very much you coming to us and say, hey, can you do it? And we obviously said, yes, we could, and turned it around. It was an easy one.
That's great. Yeah. It's like a byproduct that we didn't necessarily know we needed in the beginning. All right. So there's a question here, Paul. Is the ball image processing done in real time or some minutes or hours later? Can you field that?
I can. It's so a combination of, and it depends what it is. So pretty much all, there is a live data stream that's flowing out of the system the whole time. So all of the The biomechanics and the ball tracking is done in complete real time. We also have a part of the process called post-process, which can take, so the spin, for example, is something which is done in a post-process application. But so it all, everything keeps up. So once you've the process that does spin, the bit of data that you, by the time you've already tracked the pitch automatically, you know the 1 second pieces of video from all of the cameras, which is going to be useful for spin. And so that then gets done, that 1 second of video is looked at in more detail to get the answer out. But you know, it takes like 10 seconds. So it's all done before the next pitch it is pitched and fed through. But the live data stream is valuable. If we think about all the reasons that this data is going to be useful for, then clearly the entertainment side of things and what's fed into broadcast, but then virtual recreations and trying to take the sport to the next level in terms of its presentation, you know, that live data stream will end up being important, I think.
So that's great. There's one more question here. There's rumors that swing tracking will be available in the future. What does that look like?
By swing tracking, do we mean bat tracking?
Bat tracking, yeah.
So not in the future. It's done now for a good number of the teams. So it's Major League Baseball kind of installed their systems a fraction too early. That for bat tracking, the 100 frames per second cameras that we put in for theirs are not really fast enough for bat tracking, because Clay explained really well how you can use a slightly lower frame rate camera for the biomechanics, because you can fit the trajectory to it quite well. So you end up with a much higher resolution, you know, output than the frequency of the camera. Bat tracking, you still need at least 300 hertz, just raw data, because, you know, it accelerates and decelerates so quickly that unless you've got much more data points. And obviously one of the key things around bat tracking is what happens through impact. So if you want to actually really model, you know, the contact point and how the bat changes trajectory, you just need a few more frame rates. So a decent number of the teams have installed their own systems, which we provide with higher frame rate cameras. And so all of them now do have the bat tracking data from that.
That's great.
And I'm sure Major League Baseball, once they've got lots more money and COVID's over, will upgrade their systems. So all ballparks have it.
I share that ambition, Paul. That's great. All right. Another question here from Barton that I'll answer is orientation coming in 2021. So Barton, Hawkeye already delivers that to me, but I'm not going to share that with you in 2021. I'm going to wait till 2022. But that's a joke. We will have orientation data that'll probably get available to the teams. I would speculate that that's going to happen sooner rather than later. Let's see if there's another question here that you might want to answer. Paul, were any MLB clubs using Hawkeye before the ubiquitous rollout in 2020?
No. So we've not done anything for the teams. We've done some baseball for Fox. We've done the series before then, and we've done a reasonable number of trials, both in the lead up to doing stuff for Fox and with Major League Baseball. But it's so similar to a lot of the other sports that it wasn't a too big a risk. At one stage, last season was going to be a shadow year. So we ended up rolling out and being used for real slightly quicker than the original plan, but we'll go into the details for why that plan changed. But you know, Major League Baseball, I don't think, took on too much risk by transitioning systems, because, as I said, they're going to a company that, you know, a lot of our other sports are technically a lot harder than baseball, quite frankly. So it wasn't the scale and everything is a challenge, and that you play so many games and all the rest of it. But from a technical, the challenge in baseball has never been to get the system to work. The challenge is getting it to always work, with the volume and that side of things. But that's really it.
What's the most difficult sport to track?
Our goal line technology system is pretty clever. It's very different. Obviously, the ball in football, soccer, is much bigger, and it's just around the goal, but it can be very obscured in a goalkeeper's chest or diving on top of it. So we can track a soccer ball to around 5 millimeters, even if we can only see you know, maybe a quarter, even less of the ball, we still can track it. So that's cool. If I could just say a couple of other things, Clay, just while queuing up a few more questions. Coming back to the innovation side and using this as an opportunity for us to really ask the question of what it is that the teams and everything want and to challenge them. For me, the data will definitely progress in terms of what it can enhance the fan and the virtual ecosystem. I think that's well taken care of. But it's always surprised me from a club's perspective, and this isn't really baseball specific, this is just my experience of all the sports, is how much time and money goes into the using the data for the, I suppose, the scouting purposes of assessing whether player A is better than player B, or the strategy purposes of given this set of players playing against that side of players, what's the best kind of tactics or whatever. And more in some sports of using the data to try and keep the players on the park and the injury prevention and stuff like that. But all of that's kind of well and good in terms of you know, valuing a player. But I think the real purpose of a club and the heart of a sport is to be able to take a group of players and make them better. And I still think there's an awful lot of work still to be done and opportunities to really innovatively think about how does the data enable a player to get from one level to a better level. And I also think from a fan's perspective, it's much easier to get behind a team if you feel this is a group of team that have been together for a lengthy period of time and they've improved as a team rather than a club that just buys in the best talent. So that, I think there's a real value in that. And I think there's And that's where I think it really then comes down to a combination of people that if we're all together, it'd be so much easier to do. Because to really do that at the elite level, it isn't trivial. And it's not just about the data. It's about how it's presented. It's about when it's used. It's about, you know, is it a visual presentation? Is it audio? Does it need to be completely real time? If it's pitching, does it need to be feedback as someone's pitching? What is the kind of the mechanism to really get into that muscle memory and some of the presentations I listened to earlier about the psychology of practicing with the same levels of pressure and what it is. And so getting a brainstorming group of people together, which if we're all together and over a coffee or a beer would be so much easier, but hopefully we still can do of thinking, you know, even with ex players or current players, what is ultimately what we need to do to enable a player to get better, whatever that is, that being more consistent, being under pressure, or just faster, more spin, whatever it is. And I think that's something that I'm really excited about and see as the next application-led innovation we'd love to be a part of.
Thanks. And Paul, here's a good question. Would a handheld version of Hawkeye be possible for scouts to use?
Funnily enough, do you know what I've actually done today? Is we now have Hawkeye on a mobile phone, which rolls out in cricket. Actually, next Tuesday is the first time it'll be used in cricket. But I started Hawkeye back in 1999. It's first used 2001. And the cameras and the computers we had available then are substantially inferior to what's available on a mobile phone. So the lightweight version of, and obviously the nice, even for our cricket system, we capture it on the mobile phone, the processing is all done in the cloud, so you know you don't even have to rely on the computer in a mobile phone. So it's very much on the roadmap, watch this space.
Great. And then Paul, is Hawkeye hiring any talented people interested in baseball?
That's my recruitment was the last thing on my notes at the point that I wanted to make. It's been a great journey with that overused word of getting into this sport. And obviously we're rolling out, we're in a number of stadiums, and I don't think we're really looking for more quantity of people in terms of just, it's not just anyone, but the quality. So basically we're looking for good quality people and you know, any company is only as good as its people. So there's a relatively high bar, but if for the right quality people, there are definitely options, openings available.
Great. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Scott. Thank you, Paul, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Clay, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. It was a great addition to this segment.